So, I've had a little break anyways. I hope that you all found the talk on bandits interesting. It is an interesting topic. It won't be examinable. It's just a matter of interest. And I hope that everybody's progressing now with their assignments. If not, feel free to contact the demonstrators and demonstrate some pointers and tips from them. Okay, so the topic for today is forging, and we're just going to an overview of what are the major technological advances of 4G, namely OFDM and MIMO, and then what are the sort of major flavors of 4G systems. So we'll have LTE-based systems and Wi-Fi-based systems. So, again, following on as an evolutionary step from UMTS, which we discussed last lecture. I was here in the context of 3G systems. Okay. And so again, the main goals of 3G were to enhance the status of packets. These people put in voice transmissions and sort of give them their own rights as opposed to just something else you can send over a voice connection. Okay. And so there's a number of consortia looking at how to do this. And what we're concentrated on is the 3GPP proposal, which evolves 3G systems from GSM systems. Okay. And the same, including two major steps, you have GPRS and Edge systems, which were sort of, again, evolved pretty directly from GSM. And it worked in the same spectrum. And in years, to facilitate further improvements, it was deemed that what you really needed to do was evolve the air interface, and so that would need to be achieved in a different spectrum, and that was the air interfaces are significant. It's also defined a more complex channel structure. So instead of physical module, you have the transport channels as a buffer between the physical and the logical. And the more complex multiplex signals offer channels out there. Okay. The architecture was enhanced to handle these new features, and now one of the new air interfaces, which use code division multiple access or spread spectrum technique now. Again, what we'll see with 4G is spread spectrum. That was a certain way in terms of improving the channel characteristics and the data rates that we could use, but it sort of plateaued out. And so, again, new techniques of OFDM and MIMO were proposed, which would allow for even higher data rates. Okay, so 4G is the evolutionary evidence, the improvements from 3G, and again, it's proposed by the standards are proposed by the ITU, and in terms of the balance that's advanced. Okay. So for 3G was IMTS, now we have IMTS advanced. Okay. And the data, the main objectives were to improve the data rates, and this was achieved in an area of flexible channel bandwidths and the transmission methodologies. Okay, it was designed to be more interoperable with other networks, so not just cellular networks, but WAMAX as well. And to support quality of service for our multimedia applications. Okay, and so the IP, the data transport is at the core of this network. Okay. So we're just going to look at a few highlights. The data rate and quality of service improvements are dependent on advances in radio interface technologies, and the main components of that are the orthogonal frequency division multiplexing, replacing CDMA. So you have a new way of representing the bits now and transmitting them, and then multiple bits or smart antenna technology. So by using multiple antennas, you're able to improve the quality of the signal or increase the number of signals we can send within a particular bandwidth. Okay. Hand in hand with this, the best error correction possible, and combination of modulation and error correction is measured dependent on our link quality, and additional to this, for individual users, we can allocate resources taking quality of service into account. Again, we can look at this in evolutionary terms. So we had a very, we mentioned the 3G spectrum, 3GPP, proposing MPS, and 3GPP2, proposing CDMA 2000. And both these groups looked at evolving these standards. The 3GPP proposal in LTE, long-term evolution, and it used again RPM and MIMO techniques, was taking quality of service requirements into account. 3GPP proposed evolution data optimized, but dropped this proposal in favor of LTE. So things I could have converged now on LTE, which sort of was moving towards the 4G requirements, did not quite meet the standards of 4G, but evolved since into LTE Advanced. And LTE Advanced now is the current 4G proposed standard. Again, this is standardized in these 10, and there's been groups 11, 12, and 13 since, which essentially are just refining the techniques that were proposed. Not all, but a lot of it is enhancing this physical layer, so using these OFDM and MIMO techniques to improve the data rate and data quality. Now, I want to slip in at this point, there's a competing standard, and we mentioned in the context of UMTS that WiMAX. The WiMAX met the requirements of the AIR interface for UMTS, and this has been further developed into wireless band in advance, which again improves the AIR interface and is certified as by IDU as competing 4G. So what we're going to do today is look at these technologies, so look at OFDM and MIMO, and then have a quick look at what the features are for LTE and PDAF and then the WiMAX and 802.11m standards. Okay. So, orthogonal frequency division multiplexing is a multi-carrier modulation technique. And what this means is that if you have an input signal running at a certain bit rate, then we split that up into a number of parallel lower bitrate signals. And then modulate each stream on a separate carrier frequency. So, this, this benefits to reducing the data rate in that it reduces intersignal interference by ensuring that the delay is a smaller fraction of the whole symbol duration. Okay. So if you're doing it quickly, then you may have symbols completely overlapping, extending more slowly, then the overlap is only a fraction. So you can think of this as you can think of it as sort of another spread spectrum technique, but it is clever in that it eliminates the need for non-overlapping channels. So your symbol can overlap with that of others in the frequency. And the way that this is done is by being clever about the representation of the symbol. And what we see here is that the peak of the symbol corresponds to 0.4 the other symbols in the domain. And so this is a form of cardinality, and based on this cardinality, we can recover our symbols. So what you see here again is that we have a good deal of overlap, but because we're careful about how that overlap occurs, we're going to be able to recover our initial signals.
So how does that work?
Well, again, our frequency domain is a sync function, which is the Fourier transform of a pulse. So we have, you know, the basic pulse here is V1 V2 T, and the Fourier transform of that gives us this sync function. That'll have a max at 0, and then 0.6 multiples of pi over t.
Okay. So,
we can modulate that pulse by single tones as frequencies, and what that's going to give us is a shift in the frequency domain of our signal. And if we're clever about how we choose the frequencies we multiply our tones by, then that shift is going to align our frequency representations again, so the peak of one signal is a 0 for the other signals. Okay. So in particular, we need to choose our frequency to be 1 over 2t. And this shifts frequency representation by pi over t. So if we keep picking tones of n over 2t, we get shifts of pi n over t, and again we have this pattern that we
are looking for.
So, just to confirm that this is doing what we want, and again, what we've said is that gives us our cardinal symbols, and we're able to recover any individual symbol from within, or any individual signal within combined symbols. So we have n subcarrier frequencies, and then m alternative signals per subcarrier. So frequency division multiplies and frequency subcarrier. So the signal is going to be represented as the real part of some combination of each of our signals. subcarriers. And each of those is a form
I to 2 pi k t over t.
And so now to extract the signal, we will apply
specific frequencies or tones to it.
And what we see is when we do that, if the k's are the same, so you are at the same tone, then your signaling is extracted. If they're at different tones, then again, your signal is removed. So you look for specific tones and
recover individual symbols or signals.
Now, we owe up the symbol altogether, and we'll have a finite number of these tones, and hence is represented by a finite number of Fourier coefficients. And we can therefore use a discrete Fourier transform representation. Again, this is something we studied for fact, not expecting you to understand exactly how it works. If you have a finite discrete Fourier transform representation, then you can generate any signal using a fast Fourier transform. And the plus of this is that it's relatively easy to implement in hardware. Okay. So, again, what we see using this technique,
we're packing our channels in quite close.
We're able to pack our channels in quite closely together, and the extraction, the coding and extraction can be done fairly simply in hardware. Now, you do have to account for the inter-symbol interference, and this is done by adding a guard band, and the guard band is just a cyclic prefix, so it just continues the symbol. And adding this guard band, again, typically, for an example, if you have a 1,000-tone system, they would stream 3 or 4 megabits per second. This would give us 100 data streams. You could get that down to a kilobit per second with a bit duration of 1 millisecond. And if we had a guard band of an eighth of the symbol duration or 125 microseconds, then the path differential is something like 37.5 kilometers. Okay. So you can
eliminate a good bit of interference. Okay, so that's how the technique works, and again, the first use proposed for it was to take a signal and transmit that signal, a single signal, across multiple sub-channels. Now, once you have these multiple sub-channels, it's easy to see that you don't actually have to assign each portion of the sub-channel to the same user. You can assign these sub-channels to different users. So, orthogonal frequency division multiple access does exactly that. It allows multiple users to be assigned to the different sub-channels, and then so you can fit multiple users into your spectrum. Okay, obviously, messing around with the bitrate when you do that. So each of the sub-channels is running at a lower bitrate, so that would be, have to be accounted for. But then there's no problem to assign different users to the different sub-channels. Okay, so that's one technique that's used to improve data rates and spectral efficiency. The other big technique that's introduced is MIMO, so multiple outputs. And so for MIMO, multiple antennas at the transmitter and our receiver are used to improve communication performance and or again increase the amount of data you can transmit within a given spectrum. In this case, input and output actually refers to the radio channels created. Not specifically the antennas. So, in general, what MIMO is doing is it's relying on multipath effects to create slightly different channel characteristics for different signals. And then the antennas are used to try and extract those signals. And so typically, two techniques of OFDM and MIMO are used in conjunction. Okay. So, if you recall way back to one of the early lectures, what we're trying to achieve within MIMO is a form of diversity. And so the idea behind diversity is that you're using multiple aspects of a signaling to improve data quality. And we mentioned three types of diversity: so time diversity, frequency diversity, and space diversity. And so time diversity, sending message to be transmitted at different times. So channel coding, so you're adding some form of redundancy into your message. And in hopes of improving again received signal, well, received message. Frequency diversity, you want to use multiple channels, send your signal to multiple channels, and then you're both improving your received message. And finally, we have space diversity, which is going to use antennas in different positions to take advantage of the different radio paths. So, to create different radio paths and take advantage of them. And MIMO, that's what MIMO uses
signals traveling along different paths, and we can distinguish them and we can
try to combine them in order to sort of depend on the characteristics of the paths and qualities of them, maybe better or worse, and try to combine them to get the proper, to decode the proper. Okay, so, like with OFDM, we have either dedicated to a single user or multiple users. You can do the same thing with MIMO. So, dedicate all the channels that we create using MIMO to a single user in order to either, let's say, to increase the channel quality, or you can dedicate it to multiple users to increase the amount of information you're sending through the channel. Okay. And MIMO can use all of these things. Okay. Now, even within a single user, again, those two things happening, you can either dedicate your excess capacity to sending a single signal and improving the quality of that signal, or you can move it for a given user trying to send more data through the channel that you want to validate it. Using the signals. So in the first case, you're sending a single signal, you're using spatial diversity. And so the same data is going to be transmitted through the different antennas over the same channel with appropriate phase and gain weightings, so we're going to use the different channels, so we're using the channel characteristics and attempting to improve the signal on different channels. The different channel characteristics are coming through multi-band effects, and by sending the optimal signal on the different channels, we're going to improve the quality of the signal at the receiver. So, in order for this to work, the transmitter has to have a good idea of what the channel state, map the channel state of information to make the appropriate changes to the signal. That's basically, multiple copies of the same stuff over different, slightly different paths, and combining them to get effects. Your other option, again, is to use these different paths to send different streams of data. So if you think about sending two different streams, you've doubled capacity. The interesting thing is that this is being done over the same channel, so you double the capacity within a given channel. The receiver has to rely on the characteristics of the different channels in order to decode the two different streams. And so the transmitter can cooperate in this or not, and it allows, again, for an increase in throughput. Basically, if the transmitter is not cooperating, it's probably two different users. If it's a single user, then they can optimize their transmission, or if it's a single transmitter, they can optimize it. Okay. So again, if you think about a single user sending two different data streams, then there's no reason that different users can't send different data streams. Okay. And so, again, the issue there becomes being able to decode stream, how do you differentiate between streams, between the different streams. Okay. And so, the upwind direction is called multi-threading. On the upwind direction, again, you just have different users entering the data, and it's up to the base station to decode the different signals. And in the downlink direction, again, you're not a single user looking for a single signal among many, and so they will regard that they have their signal and they regard the rest as noise. And again, there's an issue of how do you decode that. Okay. So, your modes refer to how many inputs and outputs you have available, and sort of non-monitoring techniques are single input, single output. And this is your basic radio now, and in this case, you can't really assume the worst of it possible. There's only one single know the characteristics at this point. You have issues with fading, and your capacity is going to be limited by the Shannon capacity. Single input, single output, that's our multiple output, we have receiver diversity, and so this can be used to combat fading. And so you have a single transmitted signal, but it will be received along, again, different paths, and so you can try to add, pick out the best signal on multiple paths, or maybe combine different multiple paths. So, switch diversity, just look for the strongest signal and take that signal. Otherwise, again, you can combine several. And so, in order to do this, you have to provide more processing accuracy.
Problematic in the handset. Now, finally, you can have multiple inputs, multiple outputs, and
so if you have multiple inputs, receiving antennas, and so that can be used, as we saw, either for channel robustness, so in order to improve the received signal, a single received signal, or indeed to provide, in some way, multiple sub-channels within the same channel to improve throughput. So that is obviously we're going to have to process at both the transmitter and the receiver. So using this multiple input, multiple output mode, then you need to, again, process your signal and encode it. And so we get one way of doing this is to use both space and time. So to split your signal and hook into both space and time. And so in this case, different antennas are going to transfer the data at different times. And so that would be the temporal diversity and the space diversity. Space time block is going to be represented as a matrix. And so the row is the time slot. So for any given time slot, your different antennas are going to transmit signals. And then the column represents the antenna. So at any time, your antenna is transmitting signals. So that SIJ then is the signal transmitted in time slot I from antenna J. Okay. Okay, so this represents a way of introducing redundancy and spatial and temporal diversity in order to improve the quality of a given signal. Our other option is, again, spatial multiplexing, and it's used to improve the throughput of the system. Okay, and it uses spatial diversity to split a single frequency channel into a number of sub-channels. And so the receiver now needs to be able to distinguish the data received from different paths. If they're able to distinguish this data, then you can actually improve your channel capacity beyond the limits of channeling. Okay. And so, in theory, if you have N inputs and outputs, and you can improve your capacity by a factor of n. Okay. So if you can distinguish each different signal that's sent out along the different antennas, then again, you have n times. If you have n antennas, you have n times what you had before. So the basic setup there is that at our transmitter, we're transmitting m data streams. And each of those is going to arrive at each of our receiver antennas, or n receiver antennas. And so for each stream transmitted, we get n streams received. And so
signal received at any given antenna, then it's going to be a combination of each of the transmitted signals. And you can represent that in matrix form, where we have each, we have a vector of transmitted signals, and then each of the received signals comes along a path, and each of those paths has a certain path characteristic. So the signal transmitted from antenna 1 to receiver, the transmitter 1 to receiver 1, has a certain characteristic. You don't do that by H1. The signal transmitted from receiver, from transmitter 1, and received from transmitter 2, has come along a slightly different path. So it has slightly different characteristics. That was H1-2. And then, if you're coming from transmitter M to receiver 1, then that's going to be different characteristics, and that's given by HM. So, for each combination of transmitter and receiver, then you have given the path characteristics. And that gives you signal that's received at any given antenna. Okay. So, if you want to extract your transmitted signal, well, you're going to take, you're going to apply the inverse of your path characteristics to the received signal to recover the measurements. In reality, of course, what you're receiving also has a noise component, and so a slightly more complex technique to recover, and you use some sort of minimal root square error technique to recover the signal. Okay. So that paper's over a lot of details about what exactly these channel characteristics are. Do all of this, but we're going to again leave it that way. The legends table learning, this is just the basic idea that you can actually extract the signals, and again, you can use that to either improve the quality of a single signal or need to extract or differentiate between multiple signals. Now, additionally, this would work, this would basically extract a single symbol from an A string. If you have, when you think of the unknowns, you can combine this with techniques. For instance, like space-time encoding to improve your to sort of add redundancy to your system with your signal reception as well. Okay. And so again, you can either use this for a single user, in which case they get a higher data rate, or you can use it with multiple users. Channel has a higher data rate, but then it gets split on multiple users.
So how this is used LP systems, you have things like MIMO map, so the uplink direction, subchannels are assigned to multiple users, and then the receiver keeps track of the channel state and uses the channel state between the various users to be able to differentiate between signals from different users. And so the plus of this, again, is that you can use one or a relatively small number of antennas at the user side, so at the handset, and then more antennas at the receiver side. All of the work for this tends to be at the receiver side. In the downlink direction, it's slightly more complicated in the sense that the user or the handset now is going to have to do some of the decoding work. And so typically, we try to use pre-coding techniques to allow the users to distinguish between the signals. The transmitter, again, will be doing the calculation about channel states. Imparting that information to the users, and techniques like third paper encoding are used where the user views signal as their component signal and noise, and then the transmitter attempts to encode the signal in such a way that the user is able to distinguish between their signal and the rest. And here, a very crude analogy is that it's writing under the paper. If you have clean paper, you write the black and so again, we'll just the signal has to be encoded so that it's distinguishable from each of them is distinguishable from the bulk of the rest of the signals. And so again, the transmitter determines how to do that. But the transmitter is determining how to do that. Receiver still has to put effort into decoding. Okay, so obviously that's a really, really quick discussion of MIMO techniques, and again, all I want you to walk away with is the basic distinctions that, again, you need the multiple antennas. You're clever about it, and you can, for any given frequency or channel, then you can divide it into sub-channels where previously you couldn't have done that, and therefore you can increase capacity. You can use that increased capacity in a number of ways, either to provide redundancy in the system or to share it out and provide higher data rates within the system. Okay, so that's something that you want to walk away with from that. So
I think I'll actually call the break here. I know we haven't gone as long as usual, but again, the next few topics are just a few highlights of the features of various 4G systems. And I mentioned WiMAX mainly two reasons it's still here, still being used, and WiMAX actually was the first place in which these techniques of RFDM and MIMO appeared. Okay, and then they were later adopted in the other systems. So we'll again give a sort of survey of the highlights of these two. After a short break. So I'll see you guys in about 15 minutes.